I'm just going to say this real quick. Joe and I had an opportunity to catch up before this started, and the banter that you guys have is very much in the realm of what Joe and I have. And we caught up, and it had been a while since we last spoke, which is super dangerous, right?
Yeah.
When it's been a while since our last conversation, we turn into 11-year-old spastic kids, right? We talk over each other. It's all like, you know, right, like all of the appropriate social cues get thrown aside. It's basically like a giggly episode peppered with prepubescent inside jokes. And
this is awesome.
It's not suitable for like other people's consumption. And I'm really glad that we're off to the start that we're in the because it just feels really appropriate.
We Need to Be Doing That, a podcast that combines sports, social media content, and life, though we make no promises we'll stick to those topics each episode. I'm Jonah Ballo.
I'm Keith Steckler. And on this podcast, we'll often focus on the sports content and creative we see in life and share between the three of us.
We need to be doing that. I'm Elliot Gerard.
These are the discussions we have most days in person or group text, now with the microphones on and recording.
We've known each other since 2009. We have experience in ad agencies and marketing, digital content across teams in the NBA, and creative for brands, teams, and athletes.
Come on, we need to be doing that.
We have Joe Stetson with the New York Red Bulls on the podcast. And Joe, we'll get into the other guests and what they are currently working on in their careers. But we'd love to hear what you're doing over at the Red Bulls and how you got there and, you know, how you're dealing with coronavirus within your company at the moment.
Thanks for having me, Jonah and Elliot. It's really great to be here. It's great to reconnect with Jeff and Sasha as well. Yeah, so I am at the New York Red Bulls. I've been here for 6 years. I'm currently the Chief Marketing and Revenue Officer. Started my career back in 1995 at Madison Square Garden, working for MSG Networks. Was there for almost 12 years, where I had an opportunity to work with Jeff, who excited to hear his story as well. But and then I went over to the Nets and Brooklyn Sports Entertainment, where I was able to convinced Jeff to join me over there. And I was there for 3.5 years. And then from there, went to Van Wagner Sports Entertainment, worked at an agency for about 4 years, working on the consulting practice, where I eventually came to the New York Red Bulls, where I am right now.
You know, it's cool because we have all hung out with Jeff. We went to a Nets game last year, I believe that was, when we saw the Hornets game with Sasha and met up with Jeff. And we have some common threads between all of our careers. I was at Madison Square Garden for 6 years, worked for the New York Knicks, running their digital department. And it's exciting to have you guys all on the pod today with that similar sort of approach. And I think it's timely with what's going on in the world today and in sports in general, in the fact that they are preparing to come back. So when we get into that discussion, it'll be interesting to hear your viewpoints. But before we do, let's hear from Jeff Gamble. And again, kind of a similar story with you and how you're dealing with coronavirus within your industry and sort of how you got here in your career.
So as Joe mentioned, thanks for having us, guys, by the way. This is great. Yeah, as Joe mentioned, we worked together at MSG. He got there at 95. I joined in 2000, and we coincided there for about 4 years. And as you know, he mentioned, he eventually went over to the New Jersey Nets at the time and, you know, got me to join him there. I have him to either thank or blame for that. I'm in my 13th season there. And I say I'm in my 13th season because we're not done with this season yet. This one's different, right? And Jonah, as you mentioned, it's we're in easily the funkiest year that I can recall, right? I think comparisons are being drawn to a little bit what happened in 2001 with September 11th and things like that in terms of just like world events and everything that's going on right now. We can certainly dog ear this year in a multitude of ways. But yeah, like this is going to be interesting for us. As you mentioned, just resuming the season in COVID, I was with the team actually on the West Coast when this trip when the NBA announced that they're going to suspend the season, which was wild. You know, there one night we had a game against the Lakers, which the Nets won, you know, semi unexpectedly. That was a really big win. And you're sitting in a packed arena with a sold out crowd, fans shoulder to shoulder, players on the floor and post-game interviews with the, you know, reporters in players' faces. And then fast forward 12 hours and the season's completely over. You know, we flew the next day from Los Angeles to San Francisco. We were scheduled to play the Warriors next. In the matter of like overnight, it went from what I described with the Lakers game to sitting on the bus, realizing that the NBA was going to have us play in a closed arena against the Warriors. And by the time we had touched down in San Francisco, Rudy Gobert had tested positive for COVID. And, you know, we're all looking at each other like, well, what does this mean? We check into the hotel, everybody goes to the room. I turn on the TV. And as you probably remember, I think this was like a very where were you when moment. The game between, I think it was Utah and the Thunder, got postponed, like on the spot, like as they were about to tip. And we found ourselves like literally saying, what's going on? They pull all of the players off the floor. The fans are being told to exit the building. And we're watching this live on national TV. And you're like, what's going on? And I think it was maybe even less than an hour later, the NBA suspends the season. And at that point, the dominoes just fell from league to league. And I don't remember like what was coming first. And I know Europe was on a little bit of a similar cadence from a professional soccer standpoint. But now we're stuck in San Francisco. You know, we're going from night before having a packed arena to, you know, possibly playing in front of a very closed arena to absolutely no season at all. We chartered a plane for the very next day, flew back to New York. I have not been back in my office since, as many people haven't. I haven't ridden the subway. I have, you know, not stepped foot in Manhattan, which is crazy. I live in Jersey City and, you know, would travel through lower Manhattan, World Trade Center, our train to Sunset Park in Brooklyn. And, you know, who knows when we're going to be back. It's, you know, obviously affected the entire world, and the sports world particularly. And for us, as we're navigating the restart of the season for July 30th, the bubble in Orlando, the NBA, I think, is doing some really interesting things in terms of, you know, hopefully resuming season in an innovative and creative way. But to be perfectly fair, as we sit here on, you know, July 3rd, less than a month from tip, there's a lot more questions than answers. Like, we're really, like, literally, and Joe can probably speak to this from an MLS standpoint. We're still figuring it out. And I know he's got games that are going to start this week. But I don't think it's all clear to us exactly how this is going to play out. And there's still questions as to whether or not it's going to see itself through. We're seeing all of these cases, you know, still spike. It's crazy. Yesterday there was, you know, 50 plus thousand new cases in the States, which when you look at the charts is just bananas, right? Like, we thought we were done. We thought we were good, and we're not. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting. And, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie testing positive, DeAndre Jordan testing positive, the players who were originally tested positive with the Nets when the season was postponed. You know, we're going to have a skeleton crew of guys that are down there. I don't know what that roster is going to look like, but yeah, it's a lot to navigate. Beyond interesting. I'd like to say that it's the right kind of interesting, but it's not. But we're going to have to see how it goes. It's really wild.
In the news a lot about the players and a lot of them NBA guys getting tested first before many of the public. You know, did that happen with you guys? What were your thoughts on that? And was it more than just once? Has it been recurring testing? What's the procedures been?
So in terms of the players, they've been getting tested, I believe, every other day. And, you know, as we suspended the season, I think every player either decided to kind of lock down, you know, here in New York or Brooklyn, or they kind of went to their respective homes and sort of locked down there. And once everything got re-announced in terms of the player the season resumption, they came back and started testing and doing everything in a very measured way. My understanding right now, not having firsthand contact with anybody at the arena at the practice facility aside from, you know, our Zoom meetings, is that the players are being tested consistently right now. And they're taking every measure in terms of trying to make sure that that is done in an appropriate manner. And I think that's following the NBA guidelines. I'm sure it's similar for all of the leagues everywhere. But, you know, as we see, it's impossible to kind of manage players and people the way that you think it ideally is supposed to be. Like, everybody's got to go live their lives, and there's contact and there's all of this incidental stuff that's happening where, you know, who knows how it's going to play out. But yeah, that's my understanding right now. And I know the NBA has got an entirely different and new system in place for once they get down to Orlando as well.
This was supposed to be a big season for the MLS in terms of it being the 25th season, correct? Anniversary. And was that part of the decision of coming back? Like, has that affected, I mean, also just your experience, just, I mean, Jeff's experience is very interesting and unique. How was yours when all this went down?
Yeah. So, I wasn't on the road, but we were hosting a match on March 11th when everything seemed to occur. We were hosting, NYCFC was actually playing a Champions League match at Red Bull Arena. And so I was there watching that. And I remember just getting in my car and listening to sports radio on the way home and starting to hear some of the news about what was going on in Utah and Oklahoma City. And then, you know, and I was just trying to do the math in my head. I think it was like 115 days ago, right? You know, at this point, right? Where I remember the back of the New York Post that said March 12th, 2020, the day the sports world stopped, right? You know, but what was interesting, though, that probably 2 weeks prior to that, our general manager, Mark de Grand Prix, you know, he actually tried to get ahead of this with us. We established a task force probably at the end of February. And maybe that might have had to, you know, do with the fact that we are part of a global brand with Red Bull, and they were probably preparing in different countries and different markets as well. We were already starting, and kudos to Mark for getting us ahead of it, but we actually started to prepare with the task force 2 weeks prior. And so we just switched right into, and prior to that, we almost tested working from home. We had a couple of days leading up to that day just to kind of see how the staff would work working from home. And we immediately that night flipped the switch and said, all right, you know what? We're going to work from home from here on out until we determine it's safe to come back to the office and come back to the arena where we work at our facilities. But he established two guiding principles for us that would, in essence, guide our decision making, you know, throughout this period. And one was the primary health, safety and welfare of our staff, our players, our partners, our community would be the driver of every decision we make during this time. And that included us, you know, not laying people off or furloughing anybody during this time. Which I'll say we've accomplished that to this date, you know? So the second one being that we would take one more extra step in terms of cleaning and sanitizing our work environment. And that's something that has translated throughout and has been an important part of the process. Jeff and I, both of our teams have the same, chief medical officer with Dr. Farber from Hackensack Medical. And he's been great in terms of guiding us in terms of protocols and procedures and working with our operations team, our legal team, our HR, our sporting side, to make sure that we are, you know, one step ahead in terms of what the CDC or local or state agencies are telling us what to do, and really putting us in the best position to make sure that we're maintaining both of those. So, you know, and then from my end, you know, it really was adjusting what we are doing, you know, from a commercial standpoint, the commercial side, which I oversee, kind of shifting our priorities to focus on four things: communication, engagement, preparation, and relationships, you know, during this time. And that's, you know, communications both internally and externally, you know, making sure that it's important for us to manage all, you know, communications with the focus on transparency, making sure that we're focusing on facts and consistency. We're not going to make any quick statements or grand declarations of how we're going to fix the problem or fix the pandemic and societal problems during this time as well, too, as we're facing right now. But genuinely being mindful of what role we can play and, you know, with bringing up more platforms and, in essence, transforming what that fan experience can be during this time and staying engaged. So that's been a positive, actually. And now that we're 5 days away, you know, today being July 3rd, being 5 days away from MLS's back tournament starting up in Orlando, our match is set for next Saturday. But I think we're excited to get things started again.
You may have just answered it, Joe, but I'm curious to both of you, and maybe we'll start with Jeff first. What have you seen potentially with soccer in Europe or maybe the UFC or anything else that either the team may be adapting or you're thinking, or you know, that the league may be adapting?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, right? So Bundesliga soccer started first. And, you know, I will admittedly, you know, say that I was not a German league fan, and not because of anything with the Bundesliga. It's just, you know, I follow the EPL, I follow La Liga. I'm a big soccer fan. I'm, you know, as Joe can tell you, I'm out at the MLS games watching Red Bull games all the time. But I was locked in once Bundesliga started, right? I was just excited that anything was back on TV. And I attached myself to watching that once the EPL started as well, you know, started like digging in on that. And it's interesting because with no fans, you really can appreciate what fans bring to a sporting event. And that whole atmosphere makes such a huge difference. And, you know, we had this debate about the fact that they're pumping crowd sound into the broadcast and whether or not that seems appropriate or not, right? Because it's not real. There's somebody who's pulling or, you know, a lever or pushing a button that's reacting to certain things that there is happening on the field. And is that authentic?
I just wanted to ask Jeff real quick. Jeff, so, you know, I think there's a little inside baseball in terms of the league and what goes on. But, you know, with All-Star Games, right, that's an NBA-run show in terms of event presentation. So how is the league approaching that? Is it their deal? And then basically, you know, maybe teams will have input, or are you, you know, basically the Nets, they don't have an event presentation perspective in the way they're going to be presented and the games are going to be completely 100% NBA's deal?
No. So actually, it's going to be home and away, the same way that you would have home and away games through a regular schedule and season, but at a neutral site. So you will have the Nets, for example, there's going to be eight remaining season games on the schedule before they do playoffs. Four of those games will be Nets home games. They will be presented as Nets home games. So our game presentation team right now is in charge of, for those LED screens, completely kitting out the presentation as though it was a Nets home game. So
gotcha. The
Nets score, the PA is going to emphasize it as though it's, you know, a Nets home game. We are sending game presentation people down there from our side who are going to call the game. So there's going to be that component of home and away that will take away from the neutrality of it a little bit.
I'm with him that I do think that, you know, there's going to be more of a virtual experience. You know, as I mentioned before, like, we're just focusing on transforming that experience, right? We don't know. There is no playbook for this, right? We're changing the playbook. You know, you keep hearing the term new normal. You know, Jeff mentioned before, kind of relating this back to 9/11 and what happened after, you know, some of the changes there. If you think about your airline experience, right? TSA, right? You think about, like, after 9/11, like, all of a sudden now we had to take off our shoes, and that experience changed drastically. And everybody's like, oh, this is not going to last. And here we are 20 years later. And that's just the normal, right? That's just the norm, but it's still happening, right? And you know, like, when you're stepping up to enter into security, you're like already starting to take off your shoes and you're starting to, you know, prepare. And that's the same thing going into a stadium since too, like, that experience changed a bit. So we're going to start to see an evolution. And what I would say is that the piping in of the crowd noise, as different as it may seem, you know, just think about your TV viewing experience, right? There used to be a live studio and audience. Then they started to pipe in, you know, laugh tracks and stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's normal, you know? And so it will be interesting to see how things evolve and how, you know, the normalcy evolved into becoming, you know, what used to be traditional is not even, you know, normal anymore, right? You know, so that's interesting to see. The other part I want to just touch on that Jeff mentioned too about him now watching Bundesliga, like, that's actually part of what I'm excited about being in this market, being part of a league like MLS. You know, right now, people are hungry to just watch sports again. Right. I remember being excited to watch horse racing back in April, and it wasn't like Kentucky Derby or Belmont Stakes, nor did I have money on the race. I was just excited to watch live competition, you know, and here in this market, you know, there are 13 professional sports teams in this market. Right. So the share of voice for an MLS soccer team is limited. New York is an NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL town before it's an MLS town. And that's just the reality of it. And it's an uphill battle sometimes for us competing with these other teams in our market for share of voice in the local media, for winning over sports fans. So what I've told my teams these last few months is that we are all, in essence, you know, at more of a level playing field right now, right? Everybody stopped playing, for, you know, nobody's played anything in this market for the last 115 days, right? And we don't know when we're going to start playing in front of fans again. You know, so NFL, who's used to, you know, the Jets and Giants, who used to play in front of 80,000 fans, when they return, you know, are they going to be returned to 80,000 fans? You know, and are they, whatever limitations we have are going to be similar limitations that they have as well. So I'm a little excited about that. I'm a little excited that, you know, like if Jeff mentioned that he wasn't watching Bundesliga before, but he's watching it now every week, every weekend, hopefully he's, you know, watching Leipzig and Tyler Adams. But, you know, the fact that he's not watching that, hopefully then when we're starting up in 5 days prior to the other leagues in this market starting up, maybe there will be some folks that are just hungry to watch competition again, and they're going to watch an MLS match. They're going to watch us play against Atlanta next Saturday, and they're going to say, hey, you know what? This is great. I'm now going to be a Red Bulls fan.
I've got a question coming off of that for everybody here. And it kind of goes to the football thing. You mentioned the 80,000 fans. Would this group, I think just as a polling question, would you guys go watch a live event right now, either in a full arena, a partially populated arena, or somewhere in between?
Yeah.
No,
probably not. Probably not.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
That there's going to be an evolution to it, right? We're not going to go from one end of the spectrum, no fans, to 80,000. You know, it's going to kind of creep back into normalcy. Yeah. And I also thought about, like, what if these leagues do need to find ways to bring in income, profitability during this time. And obviously they're meeting their TV contracts as well. So it's a challenging thing, but all that money that's lost from fans walking into the arena is a big one. And I've been thinking about, like, why isn't there some discussion on limited seating to VIP people? You put it as auctions. Maybe there's an element where some of the money goes to charity organizations, but some of the money maybe help, you know, staff these teams, these leagues, and keep people having jobs and keep the economy of the sport going. If there's somebody who's got a ton of money and a ton of dough to throw away, and they're like, I would love to see a soccer game with my five best buddies and they're playing for us, basically, or a UFC match where you're ringside, cage side, right. You know, these amazing experiences, kind of what Fanatics has done with, you know, auctioning off these moments. I don't know. It was just something that has come to my head, and I'm wondering if that's even plausible or has been talked about.
It's interesting, Jonah, because I think that comes up a lot, right, in our conversations now. And as I think I alluded to before, we didn't think we would be having the same conversation, or we'd be still in the same situation 4 months into this, right? And I think as this all started to take place, the conversation or the chatter seemed to be like, oh, you know what, this is going to be like a month and then we'll figure out what's going to happen with the rest of the season. And now here we are, and we're watching all of these cases start to really ramp up again. Mm-hmm. And every time that something like that you're proposing comes up, it's like, well, these questions are impossible to answer because we don't know where this is going. Right. And so, you know, and as people start to think about, you know, well, maybe it'll subside by the end of the fall or by the end of the summer, whatever the timeline is, you also start to realize, well, you know, then flu season is going to come back around and maybe this ramps back up again. And you end up at a dead end in terms of the conversation because nobody has any clue where it's going. So, you know, as we see the cases right now, you know, start to skyrocket again, it's impossible to say that anybody would be comfortable going into an arena right now, right? You know, and you saw Trump in Oklahoma City, you know, a week or two ago. And I think there was an expectation that his supporters were going to come out in droves, and they had the spillover event that got canceled. All of a sudden you looked at it on TV and it was, the arena was half empty. And I think there's a real apprehension, even in places where, you know, Texas, Florida, southern states, and, you know, they seem to have felt like they were in a good place where it's like, uh-oh, all right, now we really need to, like, figure this out. So it's hard to say, like, where it all goes, but I don't think there's a comfort level or an appetite for what you're proposing yet.
I went to a restaurant and sat outside, you know, last week and had a drink and dinner with somebody, but sitting outside, I didn't think I would be doing that, you know, a few weeks ago, right? So, and then, you know, going back to Bundesliga, like, they're playing right now in front of no fans, but they're actually setting up to start playing in front of fans again soon, right? So you think about these countries that are ahead of us in terms of, you know, where they are in progressing, you know, and establishing what that new normal can be. So we'll see, like, if they have success with that and they start playing in front of 50% capacity or 25% capacity, and that keeps moving up. Yeah, we might be slightly behind it. I am fearful of next waves because we don't know, right? You keep hearing about, you know, potentially another wave. Yeah, I mean, I do think right now, today, there are a lot of people, the challenge is twofold, right? Like there are people behaviorally that might not want to be in front of crowds, right? Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, you also have the economic impact. And Jonah, you mentioned like the VIP experience. And yes, there's definitely still some high net worth individuals. There's also, there's Lord knows that there's going to be a lot of folks with, you know, the unemployment rate going up as it has, and, you know, over what, 45 million people that are unemployed right now, right? That are in essence, you know, not going to be able to afford the tickets that they might have, you know, afforded prior. You know, so how do we deal with that? How do we deal with the behavioral aspect of people just kind of wanting to feel, you know, safe, and, you know, in essence, giving them that virtual hug and letting them know, hey, you can come back to Red Bull Arena because we're going to have the safest, the cleanest environment possible. We're going to have, you know, we're going to adhere to social distancing requirements, or we're going to adhere to the local agency's restrictions and what they want us to do. So. But then the second part of it is how do we make sure that those that are having financial hardships or other hardships due to this crisis, how do we make them feel comfortable about coming back as well, too? So I think that there's really two issues there.
So from an NBA perspective, I go back to what we were talking about before. It's one of those, you can have the conversation about it, and then as you start to kind of get into the details, you realize you have no way of knowing how to answer some of the questions because you have no way of knowing where all of this is going, right? So I love one of the things that soccer does that I think the NBA is paying close attention to is these tournaments within the season, right? And, you know, there's a ton of value in that from a fan perspective, I think, because it gives you an additional way to engage the team, and also teams get an additional way to potentially win something, right? And those cups are phenomenal. I know at least that's been discussed and has been discussed over the last few years, you know, casually. I don't know if that's something that's being taken very serious. I do know that part of that conversation as well was, do we figure out a way for the NBA to shorten the season, right? The 82 game season is grueling. And, you know, do you get more out of the players and the games if you somehow condense that? There was talk of shifting the season, which, you know, who knows? Maybe that's a thing coming out of this that, you know, they may look at is, you know, there was, before all this took off, like, does the season start a little bit later, end a little bit later, like call it July? Now, there's going to be probably a shift for this next season for sure. And what that means on a permanent basis, it's hard to say. Like, they're going to finish what's left of the 1920 season. It sounds like the finals could be as late as October. There's going to be a very short off season. And the conversation right now is about rebooting the 1920-21 season as late as possibly the end of December or even early January. So of course that would take that season into the following summer. And I think, you know, obviously the NBA is going to look at that and say, does this actually make sense on a more long-term basis? And it's really hard to say, but those are a couple of things that I know have at least been, from a conversational basis, been kicked around.
It's all interesting to see where this goes, especially, you know, I was around with the Knicks at the 2011 lockout, and we saw the 66 games. And from a competition standpoint, it felt like there was a run to the playoffs immediately when they started again. And I think a lot of people were excited about that. I think the competition level was better from a basketball standpoint. I guess it's just a matter of a business decision of, you know, can you thrive in the summer months when kids are out of school and people are vacationing? And, you know, how does that fit with the rest of the sports structure? But, you know, it might, to your point, Jeff, there's a lot of questions right now, and we might not know answers. But it's kind of cool to just think maybe outside the box. And I like that Adam Silver takes that approach, and things are on the table. Everybody hated the All-Star idea and pivoting to that. And it was wildly successful and entertaining and competitive. I kind of tend to lean towards Adam Silver's guidance and looking towards something that could be different, and people will immediately probably hate it because that's what they do. And then they'll immediately love it because they'll see the results from it. So It should be interesting. But we have, you know, another guy here who you can't be a silent partner on a podcast, but Sasha's been sitting here on the sidelines. We got to bring him in, right, Elliot?
Yeah. Yeah.
First time caller, long time listener. Hey, I haven't worked in a sports, on the sports side, with these guys, as I mentioned, but, I work more on the retail wholesale side. I work for Converse, which is part of Nike Inc. And so obviously a lot of crossroads.
Nike Inc, guys, in case you weren't aware that they were a corporation.
Not familiar.
Yeah. That's the stock sticker. So look it up later. You'll be able to see them on the stock market.
You know, Did they get that LLC?
Yeah. Is that INC or INK? I'm not familiar. What's your take on the NBA? Do you think the whoever wins this thing should get an asterisk, or what do you think?
Yeah.
I took advantage, as I mentioned, being friends with these guys. I grew up in France, and so I took advantage of my friendship with both Joe and Jeff to become a U.S. sports fan with the Nets and the Red Bulls. So that really definitely helped me out, learning a little bit more about, you know, these athletic leads here. You know, I don't think it should have an asterisk. Like, obviously, this is something that we're all learning of, you know, day by day. And you know, this season, yet it be very different than any other, you know, shouldn't have an asterisk behind it, because it's not based off of anything that anyone controlled. And I don't think this, you know, should impact the players that are willing to, you know, perform at their highest level. And so therefore, you know, let it be a shortened season or whatever the season comes to be. I think they still deserve to be, you know, reign champion in whatever league they are. And so I think it's just, you know, this one's for the history books, no doubt. The chapter on 2020 in the encyclopedias will be a pretty long one, and hopefully we'll get through it. But I don't think that the impact should be felt on the sports leagues from a asterisk standpoint.
Is the symbol, does it have a negative connotation, or is it just a mark that symbolizes something was different than the norm? And so, you know, I look at it and I think this is going to be, might be one of the hardest accomplishments for a team. So I don't see it in that negative sense. I know, you know, I can't bring up the 99 Knicks, but if they had won that title, you know, how are they viewed? I mean, most people don't look at the San Antonio Spurs when they won it in 99 as a team that wasn't deserving of it or wasn't one of the best teams in the league. So it is kind of interesting. I think this one is just so out of the norm and so different. I think a team that comes off of a 4-month layoff and wins a championship in this environment is going to be pretty special.
Yeah. The 99 Knicks is my favorite team of all time. Like,
you have never said that to us. That's an interesting point. Like, how do you balance the Durant Kyrie pairing and the excitement that has, and it will be next year when the two take the court and play together, with kind of where your team's at now? Has that been a challenge for you, Jeff?
It was almost exactly a year ago that they signed with the team, right? We're almost at the 1-year anniversary, give or take a day or two. And the difference between where we were 1 year ago today and where we are today feels very, very different. And, you know, the good news is that these guys are still on their way, and, you know, we'll see what the team looks like once the next season resumes. But, you know, like, it's still intriguing because we haven't actually seen it come to fruition, you know, whereas everybody in the media was saying that the Nets swept the day or swept free agency a year ago. You know, it's been this long waiting period, and you got to see Kyrie play a little bit and you got quick glimpses of him. And he dropped a couple 50-point games, which were like, oh, right, he is that guy. And in the media, he's also that guy, right? So you knew you were going to take everything with him. But if he's committed to being, you know, the player that he, you know, honestly can and is on the court, then that pairing with Durant is going to be phenomenal. And if they can amplify the team in any other way, you know, I hope that the wait is and the anticipation is worth it in the end, but, you know, time will tell.
I dig it. I like the idea of Durant and Kyrie forming a tandem there in Brooklyn and what that will do for the league and create some interest and excitement. Another interesting, exciting thing that I think I've been following for a while is kind of the return of Converse into the NBA game. It was interesting to see Kawhi go with New Balance and sort of, no pun intended, balance out the game, the shoe game a little bit, and seeing different personalities and how that can be expressed in their shoes and where, you know, kicks are going. How do you see this whole industry at this point, it's a loaded question, but and where kind of Converse fits in their return to, you know, creating new basketball shoes.
Yeah, it's been a really exciting time to be at Converse. I've been there for, you know, almost 10 years. And just to see them come back, I mean, I think the first thing is that, you know, we belong in this space. We were here first. We were here before there was ever a Nike. Was it Inc.? Is that what you guys called it?
Did you just say, is that what you guys called it? Just to back that up for a second, that's not what we called it.
Play the tape.
It's more about the
thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
I wanted to confirm the spelling.
Go on, Sasha. I interrupted you.
We have the heritage. We have some history there. And so it's great to see the team come together and build product now that's going to be featured on court versus where it's been for the most part off court over the past few seasons. One of the major differences for Converse, and we've signed a couple of players like Kelly Oubre Jr. And Draymond Green as of lately, and Natasha Cloud was our latest WNBA signing, which we're really excited about, even though she won't be part of playing the season. I think it's great for us to have some representation there. But what Converse is doing from their approach is looking at it, you know, from a more democratic standpoint. And we're not looking to sign signature sneakers and signature models like we're so aware of with Kyrie and KD and others. And I think Converse is looking at it as, you know, anyone can be an all-star. And, you know, we're looking for, you know, 100 million signature players. And we'd want everyone to, you know, feel like they can be their own superstar. So I think it's an interesting approach. You know, we're taking it a lot more grassroots than, you know, our parent company. And I think the sneaker game, you know, as we all saw during, you know, the last, you know, few years has really grown. And especially with the Jordan Doc obviously becoming, you know, such a great renewed you know, moment in time, and the sneaker sales, as you can imagine, were through the roof on that. But there was also, you know, some great moments in there where you saw some heritage, like, you know, players that were playing in Converse. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, a lot of people are asking about weapons. A lot of people are asking about all these heritage models that were beloved back in the, you know, in the 80s and 90s. And,
cons, man.
Yeah, the cons. So we're really excited about it. One person that's been on our roster, more of a silent partner, but that's been there is Dr. J. And it's great to just see how excited he is to be, you know, still part of the brand. His sneaker, the Pro Leather, you know, continues to, you know, be reestablished today with a younger generation. So the sneaker game is definitely coming back, and I think it'll be interesting to see over the next few years. And so I think it's beyond what the NBA is doing, and it's beyond what they're seeing on TV. I think now there's just different opportunities with docs that are coming out and what's happening from a marketing front with social media and how that's, you know, re-energizing the sneaker world.
No, I mean, I think that's, it's so interesting to see with The Last Dance how Jordan was the rebel and he went to Nike. He went to Nike Inc. And Converse was that monster that they were back
then.
It's almost like they're starting becoming the rebel again, which is an interesting like full circle, I guess. I want to say thanks so much for all three of you guys being on. You know, I consider all you guys friends and I've worked with you in the past, and so I love hearing all your perspectives and hearing you rip on Sasha because I like to do that as well. And usually I get ripped on, so I'll give it to Sasha for this episode. But this is awesome, guys. I really,
if I could just like really say one last thing, just kind of related to Sasha, you know, and give him a little bit of credit instead of totally like giving him a hard time. You know, Sasha's been, you know, obviously a good friend and a big advocate of, you know, the things that we've done, not just sports wise, but, you know, personally, he's a dude who's always been, you know, as you guys can attest, like on board for hanging out and being somebody that you can rely on. And, you know, he's like that guy that you, that friend that you introduce to your wife or girlfriend. And then you get a little bit more street cred with people at home, as opposed to like other friends that you might introduce where they kind of like give you the eye, like, you're going out with that person? Okay.
Hell yeah. Right. Huh. That's a modern.
But when I first started working with Joe at MSG, and we kind of, you know, at the time had this sort of group of guys that would hang out outside of the office, you know, Sasha became part of that group. And you know, as mentioned at the top of this broadcast, there was that Luke Highfire component. We started putting together all these videos, right? We started doing all these like little side projects, and they certainly weren't polished by any means. It was just more of like dudes hanging out who had recently discovered that digital media was a thing, right? We went from analog to digital, and we're like, oh my God, we can actually like make some stupid stuff. And you know, pulled Joe into that and some of our other like friends and coworkers into things that we were doing. And you know, who knew at the time that, you know, all of that stuff would kind of lead in an indirect way to some of the things that we're doing right now. Like it felt like one of those things where, you know, that project, the Luke Highfire project, was more just fun than anything, but it actually was an indicator of how content was going to be produced and distributed. And this is where we are now, right? Like there was no YouTube when we made that. It was just sort of like, if you wanted it, I can burn you a DVD copy and maybe you can go home and watch it on your own time. And, you know, as things started to progress, it became one of those things where, you know, like, wow, this is actually a predecessor of how content is going to be, you know, produced and, you know, distributed to people. And, you know, I don't know, kind of like to round out this whole conversation, I don't know where a lot of things are going, but it's sort of apropos thinking about that concept, because similar to the leagues and the games and everything else that are trying to figure out how to navigate next steps, there's going to be next steps. And these little things that are happening right now are going to determine that stuff. And, you know, it's hard to say like whether those things are going to be good, bad, or indifferent, but it's going to be progress somehow. And, you know, we're going to end up in a place where hopefully, you know, it puts us in a better position from sports fandom and leagues and everything else. And we're going to figure it out. And change is good, right? Like change, you know, whether we're pushed into it from a you know, difficult place or a willing place, you know, it's going to ultimately, I think, be a positive for us. And we just need to get on the other side of some of this craziness and see how it turns out.
No, I was just going to say, I'll definitely second that. And one of the things that we saw at Converse for sure was that, you know, creativity can't be contained. You know, no matter what it is and what's happening in the world outside, people continue to be creative from all aspects of it. And, you know, we were part of a campaign over at Converse, you know, to create at home, which was hugely successful. And I think, and I know, Elliot, you've also leaned in a little bit there, but it's, you know, that's not going to stop. And I think, you know, we'll continue to see how that evolves from both a sports lens, but also from, you know, just a general lens that people will continue to push the envelope, and hopefully it'll be change for the positive in all aspects of what we're seeing out there. So yeah. We'll also have to link the Luke Highfire down below for anyone wanting to watch, which has become digitized and is somewhere available.
It's on YouTube, right?
Yeah, as long as there's no expectations when you go into it, you might almost enjoy it.
Oh, I think it's I'm a huge fan. I think you guys need to make an extended version, you know, and keep Sasha as the lead, but bring in some other actors
Elliot,
as well.
Here's what I'll say to that. Right, so we shot that whole thing. We made that in about the span of 6 months, and at the time, nobody was married. There were no kids involved. It was just basically like me calling Sasha or Joe or somebody and saying like, hey, what do you do on Tuesday? Nothing. Like, right? It was easy. Like there was like no obstacles. We went back and did a movie trailer that I pushed out like a year or two ago. And it was no more than a minute and a half long, right? It's a fake movie trailer, which I could share with you guys. It took us 3 years to do it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because just getting two people into the same place at the same time is immeasurably more difficult now. So when there's not money involved and, you know, it's like people with their SAG cards or, you know, refuse to show up or whatever the case is, it's just like it's become a little bit more complicated. But I do agree with you. I do agree that there should be a rebirth of this somehow. I don't know how that will come about without maybe like putting it on a 10-year timeline.
Start with Jeff. Social media handles and where people can find you.
I'm on Twitter and more follower than anything, so I don't even know if it's worth sharing. I'm Insta gambler.
So where can we find Kevin Durant?
you know, it's, I got hit up by somebody unrelated to this the other day. Saying, do I have contact info for Clyde Drexler? And I'm like, I don't know if it's because I'm from Portland that you think that I've got his number in my cell phone. I don't. I can.
What about Terry Porter?
Terry Porter. Who Hubie Brown always would refer to as Kevin Porter. Like, and Portlanders would just be incredibly insulted. On Instagram, I'm InstaGambler, Insta_gambler. And you can find me there. Outside of that, like, that's pretty much it.
All right, Joe, how about yourself?
Yeah, no, similarly, and I actually think I give Jeff credit. He's more active on social media than I am. But on Instagram, I'm Joe Stetz, Joestets. And then on Twitter, I'm at Sly Stets, Slystets. I think that's pretty, but I'm not that active. But please, if you want to find me, you can find me there. Or you can just call me. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, give us your number.
Your home address would be good. Where can people find you?
555.
All right, Sasha Moses, bring us home.
I'm at Sasha, Sasha, Moses, Moses, on Insta and Twitter.
That's a wrap for this week. Thanks for listening to the We Need to Be Doing That podcast. Visit WeNeedToBeDoingThat.com for more episodes and contact information.